This episode of Armchair Explorer is brought to you by Booking.com. Booking.yeah, because yeah is exactly what you say when you found that absolutely right, perfect place to stay for you. And that is the cool thing about Booking.com that I found. It's how you can niche down into exactly what you're looking for. And that is super important. They've got a huge variety of stuff up there, as I'm sure all you guys know, from hotels to vacation rentals, everything in between. But you can get really, really specific. So here's an example. My wife and daughter are huge musical fans. I am not. Judge me how you will. I do not get them. So they're planning a trip to New York this spring to get their Broadway on, and I'm not going, which is great for them. So through booking.com, we were just scrolling around trying to find what that perfect hotel would be. And you get lots of ideas. And we found one that's within walking distance of the theaters. It's not too expensive, but it's got lots of character. You really feel like you're in New York. So no matter who you are, booking.com helps you find the stay that's ridiculously right for you. So find exactly what you're booking for on booking.com, booking.yeah. This episode of Armchair Explorer is brought to you by the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada. Take your adventures to new heights and learn more at nissanusa.com. Hey guys, welcome to Armchair Explorer. My name's Aaron Miller. I'm a travel writer and your host. And today we're going to go on an adventure to one of the most beautiful places on earth. And I don't say that lightly. When I was making this episode, I got to speak to four different locals and guides and experts. And I was just so blown away by everything that this destination has to offer. I'm talking about the far north of Queensland, Australia, and we're going to do a deep dive into that today with one of our Discover Guide episodes. And if you haven't checked these out before, they're kind of new. It's a little bit like a traditional radio show or an audio travel mag. We're going to have multiple guests, lots of different segments, from immersive documentaries to interviews, all sorts of stuff. But through it all, of course, will be adventure, nature, inspiration, all those things that make exploring the world the sweetest thing in life. So, Queensland, it's on the east coast of Australia, right at the top, and today we're going to specifically go to the far north of Queensland, or tropical North Queensland, as they call it. It's got the oldest rainforest in the world, older than the Amazon. It's got the largest reef in the world, the Great Barrier Reef. It's got amazing beaches, tropical islands, food, wine, a fruit that tastes like a chocolate pudding. More on that later. So we're going to have some fun. And if you get to the end of this episode and you agree, then we've got all the details of how you can do all this for yourself at the end of the show and in the show notes as well as a special deal for Armchair listeners. So make sure you go and check that out. But let's get going on our tropical North Queensland adventure. And we're going to start with a true wonder of the world, somewhere that I've always, always wanted to go and see, the Great Barrier Reef. And taking us there is Jeff Cameron-Smith from Down Under Dives. Are you ready? Let's go.
To see the reef from below, snorkeling and diving, you know, is something you shouldn't miss, but the opportunity to witness from the air, I can't recommend highly enough. Now, from that perspective, everything just makes sense. You know, it's really only from the air that you can truly appreciate, you know, the beauty, the variety, the sheer scale of the reef's thriving coral gardens, you know, the stunning blue and green hues of the coral sea. Flights are often the best way to see many of the larger marine species as well, like sea turtles, sharks, manta rays, dolphins, dugongs, even humpback whales. Now, the whales, they visit us on their annual migration from Antarctica. Normally, July to September, if you're planning a trip, they stop off briefly to give birth and raise their calves in our warmer tropical waters before they have their blubber build up, before returning back to Antarctica. And it's not uncommon from the helicopter or from even the boat to see these enormous humpback whales, they pushing their calves, their young, up to the surface, teaching them how to breathe. And then when all that serious stuff's over, you might be lucky enough to see an adult perform, you know, a tail slap or even a full breach. And you've literally got 40 tons of this majestic humpback whale just launching out of the water. Yeah, some assume this is to dislodge the barnacles and the like, but I'm almost positive it's just fun.
We're going to be back with Jeff later for a look beneath the waves, But before we leave the reef, I've just got to blow your mind with a couple of facts really quickly. Number one, the entire network of the Great Barrier Reef, it's actually composed of thousands of different coral reefs all connected together. It covers, check this out, 135,000 square miles, which is bigger than the UK, it's bigger than Holland, and it's bigger than Switzerland combined.
Oh, wow.
Number two, if you were to lay out the Great Barrier Reef, all those different connected pieces of coral in a straight line across Europe, it would reach from London to Moscow. Yeah, mind blown. All right, so more later from Jeff. He's got another awesome story coming up at the end. But now we're going to head over to the Daintree Rainforest, the oldest rainforest in the world. And taking us there is local guide Jason Heffernan from Backcountry Bliss.
The complexity is really what stands out for the Daintree Rainforest. There's just so much life everywhere. It just takes a sort of a keen eye or just to focus in on one area, and you'll just be amazed at just how much variety of, you know, fungi, plants, insects, animals you can see in just one spot. We're definitely going to see some beautiful intersections of a few different ecosystems. So the aquatic ecosystem in the river, the freshwater, I guess, is something that most people don't see quite as often in the Daintrees. I think where the vegetation actually meets the freshwater is one of the most spectacular intersections, I guess, you can have, apart from the actual coastline as well. We're pretty blessed with many amazing areas, but in the river itself, it's just such a calming, sort of peaceful sight. It's amazing how you just forget about any of life's problems when you're in that environment.
Jason is talking about the view you get of the forest while doing something called river drifting, which is like a cross between bodyboarding, tubing, and a kind of chilled out whitewater rafting. Jason's one of the guys who pretty much invented it, and he's going to take us on a drift in just a second. But just to set the scene a little bit more, so you completely understand how awesome this place is, picture this. When the Daintree began forming, this is how old it is, Tyrannosaurus rex roamed the earth. It existed for almost 100 million years before the dinosaurs went extinct. 100 million years. And when you come here, like all old growth forests, but particularly this one, you can feel something of that ancientness still. Later, we're going to hear about it from a First Nations perspective, but to kick things off, let's hit that river.
So it's quite a dynamic experience. It can literally change on a day-to-day basis as well, which makes it great for our tour guides. But after we pick you up, bring you to our site along the Mossman River, we get you dressed up in some boots, wetsuit if it's in the cooler months, because believe it or not, even though we're in the tropics, the water comes straight off like a 1,000-meter drop up in the ranges there, so it can be quite fresh. And then we give you a big red river sled, which is effectively just a giant heavy-duty airbed, or lilo, depending what you want to call them. And then we start heading into the forest. And then we head upstream to a section where we can start sort of navigating down another part of the river. So then we flip onto our river sleds, and we're sort of laying on them like a surfboard when sort of paddling out into the ocean. And we sort of navigate little, we call them rapids, but they're sort of mini slopes, just little fun water slide sort of sections, going through little corners around little side creeks. Yeah, just having fun exploring. It's really good because we just really take the child, even if it's hidden deep inside people, we sort of really let that child out in that experience. So basically, the further along the tour we go, the easier it gets as we start drifting more and more downstream. And then the very end, sort of the reward at the end of the tour, is we get everyone to lay on their backs. And we drift along this really nice long section, looking up at the rainforest canopy. And we just try to encourage everyone just to let go, go with the flow. Where us guides are looking around, just making sure you're not going to bump into any trees or anything. And it's just like one of these big exhale moments where, even though I've done it so many times, I still get that big, deep breathe out, and you can just feel that relaxation sort of kick right in because you're just watching sort of ferns pass over your head and just not even worrying about anything.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially with forests. I read that, you know, obviously, like, evolutionary speaking, we come from forests. But even just by looking at a photograph of a forest, it can, like, lower your stress levels biologically. Like, we're sort of attuned to that environment, aren't we? It just drops our shoulders instantly.
Yeah, so they call it forest bathing. It's definitely a lot of science behind it. And just from personal experience, yeah, there's just nothing like being in nature to really just de-stress yourself.
And particularly with rainforest, I feel like I've been lucky enough to see a couple, not in any sort of depth that you get to see it and understand it. But it always strikes me like how much life there is there. Like it just seems to be exploding from everywhere. And it's, if you've never experienced something like that, it's just like, and quite profound actually to feel that, you know, the earth is so alive in a place like that.
It is fascinating. The sounds especially, I mean, in rainforests, a lot of the animals there are masters of camouflage. So you've really got to sort of know what you're looking for, but the sounds are always there. So if you just stop and get everyone to be quiet for a second and just listen, you'll just start hearing all the different insects and birds, sometimes the mammals as well, just sort of calling out through the forest.
The symphony of the forest, right? Like it's as you
it
get to pick out
all
the individual notes to it. So what are some of the animals and birds that you love to see when you're given tours there?
So on our river drift, we have plenty of fish in the river. Freshwater turtles is really what we're trying to spot for the guests. There's something weird about a turtle that just triggers everyone's fascination.
There is, isn't there?
Yeah, I've never really quite put my finger on it, but I'm the same. I'm like, turtle. So yeah, turtles are definitely one of the go-to animals if we can find one. We're pretty lucky to have plenty there. We've got sort of eastern water dragons, which are like an iguana, like an Australian iguana, I guess, on the sides. And then we've got some more elusive animals. They are endemic Boyd's forest dragons. They like to sit on the trees and sort of not move and hope that we don't notice them. But they're just a fascinating animal to see. And also platypus is probably the harder animal for us to find in the river. And they're just, across the country, they're just extremely good at being elusive, but we do see them every now and then. We had a couple of weeks ago, we had some people swimming. They had a platypus literally swimming around our river sleds there. So yeah, when they're seen, which is fantastic.
And I also want to ask as well, because I looked this up and I think the Daintree is the oldest rainforest in the world, because they talk about like old growth forests, but that's like 180 million years or something like that, isn't it? That's
very
insane.
Old.
Can you sort of feel that a little bit when you're there, that sort of Jurassic ancientness?
Definitely. There's a few amazing spots we love to take guests, and it just gives you that kind of awe, especially when all you see is nature around you and some big mountains around you as well. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's basically impossible to explain to a human brain what 180 million years is, but when we can sort of point out some of the common ancestors that are still living there, then we can make it a little bit easier to understand, especially the plants. We call them living fossils, or green dinosaurs is another great term. And so you can kind of paint that picture of like, this plant has basically been growing here unchanged since the time of the dinosaurs. So it helps to sort of paint that picture of the age range that we're talking about in there.
Yeah, when you start getting into all that sort of deep time stuff, like you're right, you can't comprehend it, but somehow it still blows my mind.
It's
just incredible, isn't it?
It's incredible.
So it's the end of the tour. We're lying there on the sled, looking up at the canopy. What do you hope? What's the sort of feeling that you hope for one of your guests to leave with?
Ultimately, just a sense of calm and peace and relaxation. I really just want people to have fun. In that fun, we kind of hide in or add in some information to teach them. But I think that's the best way to kind of learn to teach people, is sort of hide the facts in the fun. But yeah, definitely just a sense of connection, which could just be that pure zen or calm sort of feeling. Yeah, just that connection and to come back. We have a lot of people that come back year on year to do the same tour, so
just to top up some of that forest bathing, some of that river bathing zen that they need. Yeah,
100%.
I guess. Yeah. Incredible. Jason, it's amazing to meet you, mate. Thank you for all the awesome stuff you do, and thanks for coming on the show.
If you guys fancy trying your hand at river drifting yourself, Jason's company is called Backcountry Bliss, and it does sound like bliss, doesn't it? So search it up, or links in the show notes. And we're going to stay in the Daintree for our next segment, but see it from a completely different perspective. This is the ancestral home of the Aboriginal people of the Kuguyalanji tribe, who have lived here for tens of thousands of years. Australian Aboriginals are thought to be the oldest continuously living culture on Earth, with records dating back as much as 60,000 years. Understanding and respecting that Indigenous history is, I think, a really important part of visiting any country, but perhaps particularly Australia, because of that direct link to the distant past, stories passed down for millennia. And that is what Juan Walker is going to share with us today. Aboriginal tourism is true ecotourism, he says. Sharing knowledge passed down for tens of thousands of years allows people to gain an understanding of how to live in harmony with nature. This knowledge, once understood, he says, can be applied in everyday life, which for many is transformational.
Yo, yuri yalada, nyaga buri wan, nyaga gugu yalanji bama, yuri yonbro, gugu yalanji bubu. G'day everyone, my name is Juan Walker. My Googyalinji name is Gurrunba. I'm an Aboriginal man, Googyalinji man from far north Queensland. My country, Googyalinji country, is the rainforest areas of far north Queensland. So I base my tours and operations out of Port Douglas and Mosman primarily, and we work in the Daintree Rainforest, which is the oldest surviving lowland tropical rainforest in the world. Yes, sure. So the Mosman Gorge, that is part of my grandmother's traditional homelands. It's a beautiful area. She was born just outside of the Mosman Gorge along the river there, which we call, where her camp was, is called Jingalmu. But the gorge itself, it's not what you'd think of as a gorge when you see it, because most people, when they think of a gorge, they think of a big, deep hole in the ground. But the gorge is a beautiful freshwater river running between two big mountain ranges. And you have these beautiful giant rounded granite boulders that are scattered all through the river system. And so as the beautiful water runs over those boulders, it creates these amazing white water rapids, but it also filters and cleans the river system. So even after we get our big floods, after 2 days of dry, clear weather, the river becomes crystal clear again. So beautiful river system, giant grey granite boulders, and then all around it, lining the river system, Daintree Rainforest. So you get this beautiful grey, white, green colours along the river, and then all of your different shades of green from the rainforest scattered along the side. And then you have the amazing mountains that rise up. So when you're standing on the river, just big ranges with rainforest scattering all up the sides of the mountains as well. We're very lucky up here that we have access to such beautiful natural environment. As I said, from old tropical rainforests to beautiful beaches, estuaries and river systems, and it's a short boat trip to the Great Barrier Reef. So we are very spoiled in the range and diversity of amazing ecosystems that we have. We have what we call lore, and we spell it differently. It's L-O-R-E, and it's lore of the land. So it's a way that our people have maintained these cultural practices since creation, and these stories of how the land came to be. So through giant beings, spiritual and mortal Nephilim giants, as they traveled through our country here, they created the land and everything around us. And through those stories that we teach people, well, our children and our family, the lore is maintained. And so through our tours, we give people an insight into some of that lore. We try to teach people about Googyalanji, Aboriginal history. And Aboriginal history here can date back roughly up to 60,000 years. Aboriginal people have occupied, utilised the natural environments of the Australian continent. Once I have my guests on board, I do an introduction into the local Googyalanji people. So explain a bit about the history and our traditional land boundaries. So Googyalanji land boundaries, where our language is spoken, it extends from just south of Port Douglas. So the Mobra River areas where our last camps were, which is just south of Port and south through to Pretty Beach, the areas that our people hunted and accessed the coastline there. Then our traditional lands run north along the coast, all the way through to Cooktown, which is just, it's quite a big area, about a 400-kilometre stretch along the coast, and then inland over the large mountains, the Great Dividing Ranges where we are, to the beginning of the Savannah country, which is about 60 to 100 Ks over the ranges. After we have our guests and we've done our little history lesson, one of our stops through the day is at one of the local coastal beaches. And we take people out and we teach them, in an open, controlled, safe environment, how to throw spears. Then we'll get them out there and we'll have a go at trying to catch something to eat, whether it be a mud crab or, a little fish or something like that. We show them how to throw the spear, get them out there and see how good they are. Here we've been very fortunate, in the rainforest areas. It was a very recent transition for our people. So a lot of our medicine and cultural practices has been maintained. And people are blown away by the amount that is still utilized out there from, beach eye drops that we use when we get salt water and sand and mud in our eyes that are a little fruit, to, toothache remedies, skin remedies, for sores and cuts and lacerations. There's tree saps that we take for headaches and fevers. That's all still practiced and still used on country today. But one of my uncles who, sadly passed away now, but he had this amazing saying: when most people come to the rainforest, all they see is a complex wall of green. But to Gugyalanji people and rainforest peoples around the world, it's a medicine chest, a tool shed, a hardware store, a supermarket, and a church, all in one. I think everyone can find that connection to land. Now, it's about understanding about, the home, the place where you live, and that's what we try and teach people, our way of looking at the natural environment, rather than looking at it as something that we use and something that we live on. To our people and our ancestors, it was a part of us and we are a part of it. So rather than looking at it as just a resource, think of it as an energy, a spirit. And because that's how our people saw it. Everything has energy, everything has spirit. And so it's the same as you. So treat it the same way as you'd treat yourself.
Thank you, Juan. His company is called Walkabout Adventures. So when you do come up to North Queensland, give him a shout and maybe consider starting your trip with him as well, because understanding that Indigenous perspective first will deepen every single experience that you have after. Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know about something. We worked with a company called Down Under Endeavors on this series. They helped connect us with a few of the locals down there. They're the Aussie experts, and I managed to twist their arm into offering you guys an exclusive deal for Armchair Explorer listeners. And it's a really good one. You get $500 off your next trip, which is a massive saving. I'm sure that you'll agree with that. $500 is awesome. All you need to do is go to downunderendeavors.com/armchair. And endeavors, by the way, is spelt the proper way, with an O-U-R-S. And once you get there, enter the code armchair25 to get that $500 discount. And look, Australia, I know, is a bucket list destination. It's far away for a lot of us. I get it. But if you like the show, a great way to support us is by just heading over there to find out more about it. I really, really want these guides to be about things you can do yourself, and this is one of them. So even if you're not planning on going to Australia straight away, but maybe it's on your bucket list for one day, if you head over there, it A, helps out the show, and B, you get that $500 off. So go and check it out if you can, downunderendeavors.com/armchair. This episode of Armchair Explorer is brought to you by Nissan. I'm really thrilled to continue partnering with Nissan because, as all you guys know, this show is all about celebrating the pure joy of exploration and the joy of propelling your adventures to new heights. I hope we inspire you to do that. And Nissan is here to help you find that next adventure with the all-new Nissan Armada Pro 4X. It's got a powerful new engine. It's got incredible towing capacity and adventure-ready technology. The Armada Pro 4X is the first Nissan Armada to earn that Pro 4X badge, so that's really cool. It's also super plush inside. It's got a premium interior for up to 8 passengers and tow 8,500 pounds worth of adventure toys as well. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Armchair Explorer. Explore further with the Nissan Armada Pro 4X, and you can learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I was never really a runner. The way I see running is a gift, especially when you have stage 4 cancer. I'm Anne. I'm running the Boston Marathon, presented by Bank of America. I run for Dana-Farber Cancer Institute to give people like me a chance to thrive in life, even with cancer.
Join Bank of America in helping Anne's cause. Give if you can at bofa.com/support Anne. What would you like the power to do? References to charitable organizations is not an endorsement by Bank of America Corporation. Copyright 2025.
Okay, up next, we're going to spend some time with Andrea Bretz from Outback Tasting Tours. She's a Port Douglas area local. She actually lives just outside of Port Douglas on Trinity Beach, which she describes as a tropical ambient village. How good does that sound, an ambient village? So you're probably going to want to spend some time there, but make sure, she says, to head up to Cairns as well. We haven't even spoken about Cairns. We're kind of focusing on the outdoor and nature side of North Queensland in this episode, but Cairns is the city of the region, quote unquote. It's way more chill than that. So I'm just going to shout out three interesting things I've learned about Cairns but couldn't fit into the show. One. It's home to the world's most dangerous bird, the cassowary, which is kind of like a cross between a giant chicken and an MMA fighter. But don't worry, you're wary of humans, so unless you're picking a fight, which you don't want to do, you're going to be fine. Number two, it's got the heart of a city, but it's got the soul of a beach town. If it was a person, Cairns would be part that barefoot guy chilling on the beach and part that cool hipster hanging out at coffee shops and bars. And three, finally, it's got some absolutely stunning tropical islands just off the coast. So you can literally go out, spend the day snorkeling right off the beach, hiking. There's some amazing trails there, watching the sunset, perhaps with a picnic and a cold beer you've brought over on a ferry. I want to live in Cairns. But we're not going there today, anyway. Andrea is taking us somewhere just as special, but perhaps less well-known. So let's start here. Let's imagine we spent a couple of days in Cairns. We've run away from a cassowary. We've dug our toes into the sand and had a really nice coffee. We've visited some absolutely stunning tropical islands. We've watched an amazing sunset. But now we want to head out of the city. We're feeling a little hungry. So Andrea says, I know exactly where to take you.
The Atherton Tablelands that we have here, which is basically to the west of us on top of the mountains, is the third jewel in the region's crown because that is where all our food comes from. It has very rich, very deep volcanic soil. So the saying up on the Tablelands, Aaron, is if you drop a pin, you're going to grow a crowbar. That's how good it is.
You know what? Can I just say, Aussies have the best slang, the best sayings of anyone in the world. It's like, it's remarkable how you guys come up with this stuff.
I know. It's true, though. I mean, just to give you a small example of what is grown on the Tablelands, I mean, all of our tropical fruits, so bananas, mangoes, papayas, pineapples, passion fruit, avocados, lychees.
Wow.
And then also your star fruit, jackfruit, dragon fruit, Davidson plum, which is an indigenous forest fruit, black sapote, which is also known as the chocolate pudding fruit. We got a lot of people that want to come and taste that. And then all of your vegetables and your sugar cane and peanuts and macadamia nuts and coffee and tea. Pretty much you can grow anything on the Tablelands except wine grapes. So how do we do a food and wine tour? Well, they're very innovative around here. They make wine out of some of these tropical fruits.
Do you have a chocolate pudding wine then, I'm presuming?
I don't think anyone's actually gone that far yet. We do have a Brazilian tree grape wine.
Oh, yeah, that sounds lovely, actually. I think I like the kind of fruitiness of all of that. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
By the way, you make me really hungry. I've never heard anyone list fruit so effectively as that before. It was just like, wow, that is a heck of a list right there. So, like, kind of place it for me. So if we're based in Port Douglas, let's say, where do I have to go to get out to those beautiful tablelands where all that delicious food and fruit and wine is?
So it's basically what we call up the top of the mountains. The mountain range that runs from all the way down through Australia is called the Great Dividing Range. So there are multiple accesses up to the top of there. So very easy to reach from Port Douglas on the Port Douglas tour, and also similarly very easy to access from Cairns. We go up this amazing highway. We go around all these incredible bends with amazing scenery, and then all of a sudden we're 2,200 feet up above sea level, and everything changes. So the diversity is second to none. I mean, they're going to leave the coast and the rainforest to head up to the top of the range there, where we have a completely different climate. We've got savanna, we've got rainforest, we've got massive termite mounds, we've got red dirt. So all of a sudden they're in this a whole new world, really.
So that is day trip number one, but we've got another day trip on the cards. The Tablelands are amazing. They're a world of wildlife and waterfalls. There are at least 10 amazing waterfalls to check out or hike to or go for a dip. And we're going to actually hear about a couple of those in just a minute. There's also tons of birds. 75% of the bird species of the World Heritage listed wet tropics can be found here, as well as the rare Lumholtz tree kangaroo. Kangaroo. Two words I bet you didn't think went together. Well, they do up here in the Tablelands. So lots of that stuff, plus mountain biking, hiking, loads of adventures, plus one of Andrea's favorite things to do. It goes from Cairns to the rainforest village of Kuranda, way up in the mountains, and it's called the Kuranda Scenic Railway.
It's got a fantastic history. The whole reason that Port Douglas and Cairns was settled was for one of the biggest gold rush days. So up on the Tablelands, there was a gold rush that brought 20,000 Europeans and 10,000 Chinese to go and dig for gold. And it was the biggest gold rush in Australian history. And it was really tough to get the gold out from the area and out onto the ships. So it was decided that a train line was going to be built from Cairns, when Cairns was settled, up hugging the mountains. Like, I'm sure there's not too many trains like it, that literally hugs the edges of the mountains and winds its way up. And it was heading to the gold fields, and then the gold ran out. So that was it for the train for many years. And we're talking the 1880s when this train was built. So once the gold ran out, the next big thing on the Tablelands was logging. So they used the train then to bring all these giant logs and trees, such as red cedar, which they ended up calling red gold. It was so valuable. So they used the train for that. And then during World War II, they actually took all the seats out of the train and put stretchers in there. And any soldiers that were injured during the war were put on the train in Cairns and sent up to the Tablelands to recover. The carriages are Art Deco. No, folks, there's no air conditioning, just natural air conditioning. So you really feel like you're going back in time whilst looking out over the ocean and going past waterfalls.
And when you say going past waterfalls, I've seen a photo of this. It's like there's one point where it's like a really big waterfall. It's almost like a Disney train. It looks so impressive, you know.
Yep, that's Stony Creek Falls, where the train does a very sort of quite a steep bend, and you get this amazing view of this waterfall right next to you. And then as you get closer to Kuranda, the train actually stops and you can disembark and overlook the Barron Falls, which at this time of year is absolutely spectacular.
Kuranda itself is surrounded on all sides by that beautiful ancient forest of the Dane Tree right up high in the mountains. It's got little hippie markets, koalas you can hug, yes. It's a place to stroll around for a few hours, have a bite, that kind of place. But then you get to come down a whole different way.
People, I suppose, like you, Aaron, are used to cable cars going over snow, I guess.
Yes.
But this one goes over the top of the world's oldest rainforest. So it is amazing. You can upgrade to a glass floor so you can look down. But otherwise, you can just look out the windows. The glass floor freaks me out, but that's just me.
I was going to say. That sounds kind of scary and awesome all at the same time.
Exactly. They've got 360-degree windows, so you get this panoramic view over the rainforest, and then it stops at the Barron Falls, so you can jump out and then go for quite a short walk through beautiful rainforest, go to view the Barron Falls. Again, they have a clear walk edge, so if you really want to stand on a glass floor over the waterfall, for those of you that
haven't got enough vertigo yet,
yeah, then, you can do that.
That'll see you over.
And then you can jump back on, because the gondolas are going every 90 seconds, so as soon as you walk back to the station, you get straight back on another one. And then the next time you arrive at Red Peak Station, which is a lovely boardwalk through the rainforest, and there's usually a ranger there, so you can have a chat and he'll point things out, like the incredible Kauri pines, which are these amazing trees that are so big and so tall and straight. And then you can come down to Smithfield, which is just north of Cairns. And just as that gondola comes over the top of the mountains, oh my goodness, the view across Cairns, across the Coral Sea and the boats, and it's absolutely mind-blowing. It really is.
Oh, what a perfect day. You described that so beautifully. Well, you do live in, it sounds like, one of the most amazing places in the world. We're very, very jealous. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything you love about your home. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Aaron. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Andrea. Outback Tasting Tours is where you can find her. All details in the show notes, as always. Okay, so we started in the blue and we're going to end there too. Jeff is back now to tell us one last story, and it is a good one. First, he took us up into the skies to view the enormity of the reef from above. Now, he's taking us beneath the waves. But you're not even going to have to get wet. If you're like me, you're probably desperate to scuba dive the Great Barrier Reef or maybe snorkel. Both are awesome, of course. But if you're not up for that or just fancy something totally different, then there's lots of ways to see the reef, from helmet dives to, well, this. So just to set the scene, we're in a semi-submersible and it dips beneath the waves. Suddenly, that world of color and life that is the Great Barrier Reef just opens up before your eyes. And you better keep those eyes open, because you never know what you might see.
Now, one particular day, we were traveling on this tour with a group from the US. Well, there was a single lady in particular, a solo traveler, who took her seat quietly at the rear of the vessel. And we'll get onto her again later as well. But you picture yourself in the sub. You're sitting there. You're up close to the glass. You know, your eyes are scanning left, right, up, down. You know, you've got your camera at the ready. Your nose is making an imprint. I've heard this activity referred to in the past as the reverse fishbowl. And that's literally what it is. You know, we're the fish. Yeah, we're sitting in the bowl. The fish, they're looking in at us. So it's pretty unique. It's weird. we'll see schools of giant trevally. You get 40 to 50 of these fish, you know, all swimming in unison. Yeah, it's mesmerizing to watch. Yeah, it's akin to, you know, the disruptive colorations you see in a herd of zebra in Africa. You know, it confuses the potential predators. Yeah, it makes it hard for them to be singled out as a prey item. So that stuff's going on. We pretty much always manage to find Nemo, which the kids will, and some of the older kids will be happy about. Yes, if you don't know, a type of clownfish, you know, that darts in and out of this protective anemone. So we talk about that on the tour. There's giant clams. You know, these are the biggest bivalve mollusks on the planet. You know, they're easy to spot because they're not moving much. And they've got these striking colors. You know, their mantles can be 30, 50, up to 100 years old. You know, they're up to 3 to 4 feet or a meter in length. We've got cucumbers that filter through the sand on the bottom, and they play a key role as nutrient recyclers. So there's a high education component to the sub too, as well as being, you know, a really cool way to see things. You know, my personal favourite is parrotfish. Now, we have a parrotfish that you can hear when snorkeling as easily as you can see it. You know, they scrape their beaks, like a bird-like beak, where they get their name, on the hard corals. They scrape off food. At night, these fish, they exude this protective mucus sac around them, like a sleeping bag. And that not only keeps them safe from parasites that, you know, can attach to the fish while they sleep, but it's also thought to mask the smell from nighttime predators, such as eels or sharks or the like. You know, I'll never forget the first time I witnessed one breaking out of its protective coat. Like, it's like this scene out of the movie Alien, if you've seen. It was just bizarre. So Anyhow, back to this tour with the lady in the group. This single lady, she'd been sitting at the back of the tour, and she's looking over to her left where the action was going on out the opposite window for most of the tour at that point. And she just sat back to relax a bit, and she looked out the window directly to her right into the deeper, darker water where there wasn't much going on. This day, however, we were definitely in the fishbowl. And this enormous whale shark appeared almost stealth-like from deeper water. It peered directly into the windows of the sub, checking out the strange creatures inside in the fishbowl. These fully grown animals, they reach 20 meters, 20 tons in weight. So the thing that astounds me to this day, out of the 30 people on this tour, she was the only one to see it. The rest are all looking out their left window. And she was too polite to interrupt the commentary from the marine biologist. Sitting at the back, took a few photos, thankfully. And when she gets off the boat, she comes up, she grabs the marine biologist, goes, "Hey, great tour. Just one question. Can you tell me what fish this is?" And she shows him the photo on her phone. And he's like, "Oh, have you been to Western Australia recently?" Because the whale sharks, they're commonly found on the Western Australian coast, totally the other side of Australia. And she goes, No. I saw this just now. That photo was taken just now." And we wouldn't have believed her if we hadn't seen the photo. And I'm not sure if the marine biologist wanted to thank her or throttle her, for not speaking up. It's like, but this is the stuff that keeps us coming back. You could visit the reef every day for a week or months, and you're always going to see something you haven't seen before.
There's not many places in the world you can be in a submarine next to a whale shark and not think to mention it. But that's the kind of place this is, where the rainforest meets the reef, that lush green fading to deep blue. And in between, you've got wildlife, you've got waterfalls, you've got ancient stories, you've got drifting rivers, and all of that way up in tropical North Queensland. Thanks again to Down Under Endeavours for partnering with us on this episode. They are the North Queensland experts, and they helped us build this itinerary and connect with all the awesome guests we've heard from today. You can find out more and literally book this exact trip or any combination thereof at downunderendeavours.com/armchair. Remember, that's spelt the British way with an O-U-R-S. And if you do go there, you're going to get $500 off your next trip. That is a special deal I've got Armchair Explorer listeners. So even if you're just curious to find out more, even if you're just dreaming about doing it one day, head over there because it's a great way to support the show. I'd really appreciate it. And you get that $500 off in the process. So that is downunderendeavours.com/armchair. You can also find out more about each individual guest. The link for that is in the show notes, or just search up Jeff Cameron Smith from Down Under Cruise and Dive, Jason Heffernan from Backcountry Bliss Adventures, Juan Walker from Walkabout Cultural Adventures, and Andrea Bretz from Outback Tasting Tours. So I hope this episode has inspired you, and if it has, remember to never stop exploring, because the more we look for wonder in the world, the more the wonder of the world becomes a part of who we are. Dare to be truly alive. This episode was produced by Armchair Productions, the audio experts for the travel industry. Find out more at armchair-productions.com. I wrote and produced the episode, Charles Tyree did the audio editing and sound design, and our lead producer is Jason Patton. We'll see you next time.
If you're feeling overwhelmed by the news cycle, you are not alone. I'm Emma Varvalukas, and along with Progress Network founder Zachary Parabel, I host What Could Go Right, a podcast that looks beyond the headlines to uncover progress happening in the world, even in difficult times. Each week, we sit down with experts to discuss today's biggest challenges without ignoring the hard stuff. We bring nuance, insight, and a forward-looking perspective to help make sense of the current moment. Fight the urge to doom scroll. Tune in to What Could Go Right instead, wherever you get your podcasts.
That finale of The Bachelor was ridiculous.
Lest we forget this past season of Love is Blind.
I know.
At least there's always Sex in the City to keep us warm and fuzzy at night.
Always. Watching it back 25 years later has been the best.
Mm-hmm. Why are we so obsessed with watching people fall in love on TV?
Every week on our podcast, Two Black Girls, One Rose, we break down your favorite TV shows centering modern dating, love, and relationships.
Come ready to unpack the mess and have a laugh with us. I'm Justine.
And I'm Natasha.
See you every week on all podcast platforms.